You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Raise a spoon to Grandma, who always took all the hungry cousins to McDonald's for McNuggets and the play slide. Have something sweet in her honor. Come to McDonald's and treat yourself to the Grandma McFlurry today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
Have you ever wondered who the Mary was from Bloody Mary? If the Loch Ness Monster was real? Or if Ouija boards actually worked? On each episode of the family-friendly Unspookable, we look at the histories and mysteries behind your favorite scary stories, myths, and urban legends to get the real stories behind the scares. Want to solve your next mystery? Find and follow Unspookable now, wherever you get your podcasts.
I feel like who Art Ed?
I'm trying to spice it.
Artist. Mr. Wood, Art, and me.
Either way, it's ambiguous. It works on so many levels.
I know.
That's off to a great start.
Welcome to Who Arted, weekly art history for all ages. I'm your host, Kyle Wood, and today we're looking at Caravaggio. Michelangelo Merisi was born 1571 amidst the darkness of the plague, but he would become known not by his christened name, but by his birthplace, Caravaggio. Orphaned young, he was just 5 years old when both of his parents succumbed to the plague. Now, my hot take is plagues are bad, and this loss would forever be a part of Caravaggio's life. Yet, from this darkness, a genius of light and shadow would emerge, revolutionizing the art world with his raw and dramatic style. Caravaggio's artistic journey began at the age of 12 when he apprenticed to Simone Petrozzano in Milan. That feels very young to start an apprenticeship, but that was the way that they did it in that era. Artists would apprentice very young, starting off doing a lot of the grunt work, sort of grinding pigments to make the paints, and then they would work their way up, building their technical skills, learning the fundamentals of composition and light. By 1592, Caravaggio had a restless spirit and a burgeoning ambition. He set his sights on the bustling art scene in Rome. With the Catholic Church being such a major patron of the arts, Rome was the destination for any artist seeking to make a name for themselves. At the turn of the century, though, Rome was a very rough city. There were many soldiers returning from wars. Restless mercenaries proved volatile, and street brawls were a regular part of the landscape. But Caravaggio was actually no stranger to violence himself. Throughout his life, he was known to have a quick temper and violent outbursts. Actually, part of his motivation for venturing to Rome was to flee after he had been involved in an altercation and wounded a cop. Now, when he first got to Rome, he was struggling to make ends meet, and we see evidence of this in a self-portrait he painted as Bacchus. He looks sickly, emaciated, malnourished, almost jaundiced. But that was part of the beauty of his work, was this combination of the sort of raw, gritty, real world along with the divine. Hardship shaped Caravaggio's artistic vision. It's characterized by a stark realism that challenged the idealized forms prevalent in Renaissance art. He gravitated towards dramatic religious scenes, imbuing them with a raw physicality and emotional intensity. His figures were not the ethereal saints of the past, but ordinary people thrust into the spotlight. A pivotal moment arrived when Cardinal De Monti, a discerning patron with an eye for talent, recognized Caravaggio's brilliance. He offered the young artist not just commissions, but also a place to live. And under Del Monte's patronage, Caravaggio flourished. While it was controversial in some circles, Caravaggio's style was exactly what the Catholic Church needed at the time. The Protestant Reformation was a backlash against the corrupt and greedy church. The Pope and others within the church commissioned art as a form of damage control. In an era of low literacy rates, images of artworks were powerful tools to spread ideas. Caravaggio's paintings depicted a faith that was humble as he painted from real-life observations of people on the streets. Though the subjects of the art were saints, the models were lowly people. Caravaggio painted every detail, down to the stains in their clothing and the dirt under their fingernails. The message was that the church was a place for the ordinary people. Using real people as models and placing them in settings familiar to the masses made the stories more immediately accessible and relatable. Caravaggio's artistic genius was matched in intensity only by his volatile temperament. He was a man of brawls and bar fights, and his quick temper often landed him in trouble. I mean, he was in and out of jail throughout his life. It's hard to say whether this was the product of the traumatic life, losing both parents at the age of 5 and living on the streets, or it could have been a result of lead poisoning. Some years back, his remains were exhumed and tested. They showed a significantly elevated lead level, which makes sense as lead was commonly used in paints of that era. We now know that elevated lead levels can cause a person to become more impulsive and quicker to anger. Honestly, it was probably a combination of those factors and other things, but this darkness seeped into Caravaggio's art, imbuing his canvases with a sense of drama and urgency. And he employed a dramatic chiaroscuro technique, using stark contrasts of light and shadow to heighten the emotional impact of his scenes. Of course, as many know, with Caravaggio, even though he was finding a great deal of success in Rome, tragedy was never far away. In 1606, he had a violent altercation with Ranuccio Tomassoni. And honestly, like, historic records are not entirely clear as to what the cause of the provocation was, but Caravaggio killed the man. And that led to the Pope issuing a death sentence, and Caravaggio had to flee Rome. And with that, Caravaggio would spend probably the rest of his life kind of sleeping in his clothes with his dagger at his side, always ready to flee. This self-imposed exile took him to Naples, Malta, Sicily, and back. Despite the constant threat of capture, Caravaggio continued to paint. His later works, though, retained that dramatic chiaroscuro, but they reflected a more somber mood, perhaps mirroring his own angst and inner turmoil. Paintings like The Beheading of St. John the Baptist display a sense of despair and brutality that is just a stark contrast with the earlier vibrancy of that Roman period. In Malta, Caravaggio briefly found haven with the prestigious Knights of Malta. He even secured a coveted commission to paint the beheading of John the Baptist for the order's cathedral. But his violent streak resurfaced as he drew a pistol on an officer, leading to his expulsion from the Knights. Haunted by his past and yearning to return to Rome, Caravaggio continued his restless journey. Tragically, his life was cut short in just 1610. He was about 38 years old. He died under mysterious circumstances. Whether it was from a poisoning, an illness, or the consequence of a lifetime of violence, the details of his death remain shrouded in mystery. Caravaggio was a problematic figure, and he died a fugitive, but his artistic brilliance has been appreciated for centuries. Well, technically, there was a bit of a lull there for a while, but in the 20th century, people started to give him another look, and, you know, his stature in art history has really been elevated since then. He revolutionized the art world. The dramatic use of light and shadow has been really influential for generations of artists. And his incorporation of ordinary people as models for religious figures and that raw portrayal of emotions all paved the way for the Baroque movement. Now, after a quick break, I want to focus on one of Caravaggio's greatest paintings, The Calling of St. Matthew. A Among the masterpieces adorning the walls of the Contarelli Chapel in Rome, one painting stands out for its raw power and dramatic composition, The Calling of St. Matthew. Created between 1599 and 1600, this oil-on-canvas masterpiece depicts the transformative moment when Jesus Christ calls Matthew, a tax collector, to become his disciple. The scene unfolds within a dimly lit tavern, a stark contrast from the heavenly settings traditionally used in religious artworks. A beam of light pierces through the darkness, originating from an unseen source in the top right corner. This intense shaft of late afternoon light, it's a signature of Caravaggio's tenebrism technique. It serves as a spotlight, illuminating Jesus and Peter, who stand on the right side of the canvas, I guess the viewer's right, in the composition. Their figures are bathed in warm light. They exude an air of authority and purpose. Jesus is dressed in just a simple robe, though, and he points directly at Matthew. His gesture is both commanding and inviting. Peter, standing beside him, leans forward, his gaze fixed on Matthew, perhaps adding a silent sort of encouragement. The other side of the canvas is plunged into shadow, creating a stark contrast with the illuminated figures. Here, Matthew sits hunched over the table, surrounded by other tax collectors. Piles of coins sprawled across the table, a symbol of the materialistic world Matthew is about to leave behind. He seems to be caught off guard, and he points to himself as though to say, "Who, me?" But it's a gesture that in a way sort of mirrors the pose of Jesus' hands, creating a subtle visual connection between the two figures. The expressions on the tax collector's faces are a mix of confusion and apprehension. One leans in, mouth agape, while the other glances warily at Jesus. The two figures farthest from Jesus are deepest in the shadows. They're lost in the darkness, so focused on money, they don't even seem to be aware of Jesus' presence. Caravaggio's brilliance lies in his masterful use of realism. He depicts the figures not as idealized saints, but as ordinary men with weathered faces and calloused hands. This portrayal adds to the emotional weight of the scene, making it all the more real and relatable to its intended audience. The painting also breaks away from traditional depictions by placing the scene in a mundane setting. The inclusion of everyday objects like coins and a worn table underscores the human element of the story. And all of this is to challenge the viewer's preconceptions about religious figures and the sacredness of their interactions. The Calling of St. Matthew doesn't have very complex symbolism. The message is conveyed through the direct interaction between the figures, their gestures, and the play of light and shadow. The viewer is not presented with a distant, idealized religious event, but rather becomes a silent witness to a moment of profound transformation. The scene feels dramatic and urgent. It's artwork loaded with an energy and intensity rivaled only by the life of the artist himself.
This concludes this week's episode of Who Arted, part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. If you found this tolerable, please leave a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. You can find images of the work being discussed this week and every week on social media at Who Arted Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, and of course on the website whoartedpodcast.com. Podcast done.